This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Don't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello! All right, let's go into Monday morning with the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app, and all your favorite podcast platforms, whichever ones you like. I don't care. Whatever your favorite podcast platform is, just find us there. Maybe Spotify. Maybe you're a Spotify person. I don't know.
It's a new one we don't even know about
yet. I mean, I'm totally open to whatever the possibilities are in terms of what you like in terms of podcasts. But
maybe you're burning CDs.
Hey, do people still do that? A little CD burning? Yeah, like a little CD burning party?
I saw a
A jump drive?
A jump drive or what was a mini disc thing?
Download us onto a jump drive and then listen to us that way.
I saw a tweet over the weekend that said, you know, one day you burned your last CD and you didn't even know it.
Yeah, that must have been a sad moment for everybody. All right, well, we're here. Most of us. Maura is gone. No truth to the rumors that she is left in shame after the results of the big race on Thursday came out. And she obviously not only lost, but lost to a wounded man limping himself across the finish line. So Maura is gone for the week. I don't know if those two things are related or not, or if this is just one of her regularly scheduled trips on vacation to Iowa. But regardless, no Maura this week. Well, so Frank is in here today. Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Good morning.
I like Frank. Frank is not a sports guy, which is one of my favorite ways to have it. Like, Frank's in running the board, doesn't know a thing about sports, doesn't care about sports.
Some things.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you just didn't know anything at all.
No, well, I worked here, so I don't know.
What do you know?
Absorbed some
stuff. What'd you think of the draft?
It was a draft for sure.
That's true.
What did you think of the draft, Justin?
I was at the ballpark for so much of it that I really didn't get to watch more than just week round one.
Yeah, the draft was good. It was good. Seahawks did a good job.
Good. Based on everything, and I sent some stuff in our email last night that not everybody agreed that it was good, but the majority of grades I saw were absolutely acceptable and what I would like to see my team have be graded at.
You know what the draft was not? Flashy. They didn't make a lot of flashy picks.
You don't mean the draft as a whole. You mean the Seahawks.
Seahawks draft. Yeah. I don't care about the rest of the draft. The Seahawks draft was not flashy.
It was a trenches draft.
It was a workmanlike, just very simple, let's go get the kinds of players we need, whether they're sexy, as Brock liked to say last week, or you know, familiar. No, don't care about any of that. We're just going to get the guys that are going to build a nucleus of a team. The backbone of a team. And you don't need a DK Metcalf type in the second round. They didn't go with a guy like that. In fact, they didn't draft a single wide receiver. Phew. Yeah, they took some cornerbacks late,
or running back,
which I think they needed to do. But no wide receivers, no safeties, which they already have a lot of. No running backs, as you mentioned, something that we've seen them do, you know, way too early in the past.
They didn't have a second round pick, so they couldn't do it.
It's true. It did. It did help not having that option available to them there. But I give them a lot of credit. This is the way they needed to approach this draft. And it feels like they did everything right. It's not going to be the draft that the national people are going to talk about. It's not. The national folks are not going to come on and be like, oh, you know who had just a great draft? Seattle. Nope. It's just going to fly under the radar. They're not going to come on and say, you know who really blew it? Seattle. Yeah. They're not going to do that either. This is going to be a draft that will largely go untalked about from the folks that mostly make a living talking about the draft. They're not going to, you know, yell from the rooftops that the Seahawks did something big, small, whatever, or bad. But what they did was start to build a foundation of what it's going to look like under a new coaching staff, a new regime here in this market. And I give them a tremendous amount of credit for that. I didn't want them to go draft a running back or a wide receiver. I didn't want them to spend their their big time resources, even on corner. I have no objections, by the way, to them hitting it in the fourth and fifth round. Great.
Right.
Absolutely. That is where you want to find some corners, given the way your roster is currently constructed. So kudos to them. You should absolutely be drafting corners. And I know I said I'd vomit if they did it at pick 16. I would have, but not in the fourth and fifth round. Yeah, get yourself a couple of corners to come compete in case Tariq Woolen is not what he looked like he was as a rookie. Absolutely get a tight end in the fourth round and see whether or not he's, you know, your next version of what you let go this offseason in Will Dissly, and hopefully he can stay healthier. Yeah, I like those picks. I don't know whether the specific players they got are any good, but I like the thinking behind them and the type of players they got in those spots. Right? Do you need a linebacker? Heck yeah, you did. Okay, it wasn't going to be Junior Colson, so what was it? That's probably the pick that most people seem to think was the biggest reach, Tyrese Knight, who they took, early in the fourth round? Okay, maybe he was. Maybe he was a big reach, but that's their analysis of the linebacker position, and I'm not going to try to quibble with that. Oh, they took the seventh best linebacker instead of the fourth? Okay, but on their board, they obviously like this guy better than the other. So I know they needed a linebacker. I know they needed somebody to compete with the two guys they brought in the offseason from Miami and Buffalo. So great. I'll trust that they got the guy they wanted to get at that position. You needed guards and tackles, right? Well, you got three of them. One in the third round, good. Everybody seems to like Christian Haynes.
Yep.
The guy they got later seems like an absolute monster. Like, he likes to just move people as physical and nasty and mean and everything you want out of a guard. And we'll see which of these two guys emerges as the better one. And you take a tackle late just in case. So look, I don't know whether any of the players are going to be good. Nobody does. John Schneider doesn't know whether they're going to be good. Mel Kiper doesn't know whether any of these players are going to be good. Dane Brugler, Matt Miller, whoever your favorite draft analyst is, they don't know. They're making educated guesses based on trying to figure out value. And I don't think their value was crazy. They seem to have the draft roughly the same way other teams did. So they weren't getting, you know, beaten from a value perspective. They didn't overreach for players and positions that they simply didn't need. They're constructing their roster by using their assets the way you would want them to use them. Good draft. Solid draft. Workmanlike draft. And now we get to find out whether or not the players are actually good. And that's the fun part.
Mm-hmm. So is that the message that this was? If Schneider and McDonald were trying to make a statement, what was the statement?
The statement is we're going to build a roster starting right now with players at the right positions. That we need to be good in the trenches, that we need to be physical, that we need to be able to move people on a football field, especially up front. And they went out and, you know, their draft looks accordingly, right? You start at defensive tackle, then you go to guard, throw in a linebacker and a tight end, back to guard, couple of corners late, back to tackle. That's a draft, man. Mm-hmm. That's what a draft for a team like the Seahawks, built somewhat in the image of Michigan football, built somewhat in the image of Baltimore Ravens football. That's what a draft for this team should look like. Now, there's one thing missing. They didn't find their next franchise quarterback this year. And that would have been fun. That would have been flashy. That would have been nice. They weren't going to reach for, you know, thankfully for Bo Nix. But would any of the other five quarterbacks in this draft change the game? Yeah, of course. They weren't available to the Seahawks. Wasn't an option. You traded away your second-round pick for Leonard Williams. You didn't have the resources to move up. And so that wasn't an option this year.
And you clearly were not interested in Spencer Rattler.
Nobody was. Yeah. John was pretty specific about, like, hey, look, there were six quarterbacks in this draft. And that was really it. There was nobody else.
You know, once the 12 or the six went in the first 12 picks, I think it was kind of like, wow, all right. So, and then there was, slots all the way through, and it just didn't fit.
Just didn't fit.
Hundred-something picks between the...
Yeah, the other quarterbacks weren't good. There were six that were good, and then the rest of them were not good.
And they brought them in for a visit, and they're like, we're good.
I think we're all set here.
We'll take another corner.
Yeah, we're going to go somewhere else. So I feel like they did this job the way they needed to, and I know, Justin, you sent the picture of them wearing their work shirts.
Yeah. Right?
They look like gas station attendants, got a little Seahawks logo, and then the name John or Mike or whatever underneath. Well, it fits this draft. It's funny. I wrote that word last night before I saw the picture, and I'm going to keep using it. Workmanlike. This is just a workmanlike draft, and it gets the job done. It's down and dirty. It's not necessarily pretty, which is just fine. I prefer this to the pretty draft. I prefer this to the one with shiny new toys. this is the draft where you just start building a roster that is going to compete week in, week out in the NFL. And so good on them. Now we just get to find out whether or not it works. Come right back with everything you need to know, including another Mariner series win this weekend. How about that? It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
All right, no sweep, unfortunately, but the Mariners sure continue to get things done, defeating both of last year's World Series participants in back-to-back series. First Texas, then it was Arizona this weekend. The recipe, yeah, it started with pitching once again. They allowed a total of 5 runs in the series. I mean, like, if you allow 5 runs per series, you're going to win a whole lot more than they lose. The bats kind of didn't show up yesterday because 3 of those runs came in one game and they only scored twice. But overall, the pitching has just been ridiculous.
Logan's got a lot of different weapons, so he can get you out multiple ways. And I think most starters have maybe plan A, plan B. Logan can go all kinds of places with you. We've seen the growth and the development of his cutter. Got a lot of outs with that again today. Got a lot of outs with his slider today. He worked his split. He can just do so many different things, which is much different than when he first showed up at the big leagues. You know, it was just a fastball, breaking ball pitcher. So doesn't shock me that those numbers are that abnormal, so to speak, because he has different ways to go about getting these guys out third time through the lineup.
Yeah, it was pretty darn impressive outing for him. It came after one of the best you'll see from George Kirby on set. Oh my gosh, was Kirby good. Fastball was just electric. Swings and misses on a fastball, you just don't get that in Major League Baseball right now. And he was throughout the entirety of that game. Unfortunately, they just kind of didn't do a lot offensively yesterday. Josh Rojas had that leadoff home run. And then that was kind of it. 20 straight sent down by the Diamondbacks pitching to end the game. That's probably not going to win too many. And so, you take 2 out of 3, remain in first place. The road not going to get any easier after Texas and then Arizona. Who do you get next? How about the best team in baseball right now? Atlanta going to be in for 3 games starting tonight. You'll have Miller, Hancock, and Castillo in line for starts there. Overall, I guess my only other takeaway from the Mariners is this. They need more from Julio. These two. And, you know, yesterday you see the lineup out there with no J.P. Crawford and no Mitch Haniger and no Cal Raleigh. And, yeah, that's going to be a challenge for them, right? You're taking 3 of your big bats out of a lineup. Okay. You need Julio and eventually Polanco and Garver to kind of carry some of that water. They weren't able to do it yesterday. I'm hoping that that moment for Julio is there. He started to hit for a little bit better average. The next thing is to start to add back in some of that power that makes him Julio Rodriguez.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, I'll give the Seahawks a lot of credit. They had clear needs in this draft, and then they just went out and filled them after taking who they deemed to be the best defensive player in the draft on Thursday. They went and selected 3 offensive linemen, 2 corners, a linebacker, and a tight end on days 2 and 3. 6 of the 8 picks will either play on the line of scrimmage or right near the ball, with only the 2 corners who they took in the 5th and 6th rounds, respectively. No complaints here. None at all. They focused on exactly the type of players and positions that they have said are important to them, and they went out and got them.
Yeah, Steve Hutchinson, you know, talked to us, like, the other day about, like, their group, right, that they played with, you know, and just like, hey, look, like, offensive linemen need to play as a group. They need to be tough, nasty. Like, they should be walking around the building together, and, you know, they should be in their own world, you know. And that's, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. And tone setting was definitely something that was a factor in the guys that we wanted to acquire.
All right, so what does that mean, tone setting? What does that mean, bringing in guys that are going to be nasty? Obviously, it's not what they say, it's what they do. But if the guard they got late in this draft, Satoa Lamea, if he acts the way he talks, and Brock says that he does, this is kind of what you're looking for.
I would probably say moving a person from point A to point B is the most fun part. That's what I mean by physicality. You know, we got to move grown men and they're not going to let us. So I feel like I don't care and I'm willing to do my job. So I want to do my job. And you said about finishing, I do finish. I need to be better with being more consistent with that, but, that's what I want to show in Seattle. So, I would say I am a pretty physical in that way. trying to move people off the ball and trying to finish them.
Yeah, what do you want to do? Move people from point A to point B. I want to put them where I want them to go rather than where they want to be. That's the essence of the job up front. And they went out and got four or five guys that are going to play in that spot. So as I said, no complaints whatsoever. Like the linebacker, he has a tremendous motor, self-made guy from UTEP after being a no-star recruit coming out of high school. The tight end, a culture guy from Michigan who, again, got himself to that point after starting at Indiana. The corners, you got to have it for competition in case Woolen's not going to turn things around. So I don't know if any of these players are going to be good, but I like the thought process around each one of these picks, and we'll see it start to play out sooner rather than later.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, let's do some updates, I guess, for the third thing you need to know. Brian Wu had his second start of his rehab process and was fantastic once again. I got up to 49 pitches. Next time it'll be 85, and then they'll kind of take it from there. But for now, no real rush. There's no reason to rush him back before he is 100% ready to go, as you're getting everything you need and more out of the fifth spot in your rotation with Emerson Hancock. The news from Matt Brash, however, it's not good. Shut down indefinitely after his last bullpen led to some discomfort. I don't like the way it's trending, nor do you, I'm sure. It sounds like the Mariners don't like the way this is going. Bullpen, thankfully, has been one of the best in baseball, but they will eventually miss Matt Brash. And maybe it even showed up a little bit yesterday as Trent Thornton, you know, gave up a run in the, what, seventh inning or whatever it was yesterday. And
yeah,
maybe that's a spot where if you have Brash, you're able to move Thornton down one peg. Who knows?
It was his first run he gave up.
It was. Yeah. I'm not going to crush Trent Thornton. But I'm just saying eventually, like, that's where you would like to have Matt Brash in a tie game rather than Trent Thornton. Just kind of is what it is. So Seahawks did bring in Rashad Penny for a visit, Justin.
Sure. Yeah, we had him in. Talk with him. You know, it's good to see him again. He's such a great person, you know. It's good to see him. Yeah, it's a possibility.
It's a possibility they bring him back. Good. Oh. They didn't draft a running back, which thankfully they didn't need. And John Snyder said it could be a fit. 10 Huskies, by the way, found homes on draft day with another four signing deals afterwards as undrafted free agents, including tight end Jack Westover, who signs right here in Seattle. He's a guy said, and Brock and I were talking about it, would make an NFL roster. So we'll see whether or not he does it here in our town. Still nothing, though, for ZTF, who remains unsigned.
Oh. Boy.
That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk.
What about need to know on the old hammy, popped hammy injury update? How was that
for the big race? How's the big race?
How's the hammy feeling after a weekend?
Better. The hammy made some significant strides.
Man, I cannot tell you how many people asked me about it at the ballpark.
About my hamstring.
People were very concerned.
As they should be. Thursday was awful, as you know. Friday was really bad. By Saturday, I was actually feeling a lot better. I've iced the heck out of this hamstring.
Good.
Saturday, it was feeling a lot better. I'm able to walk upstairs again, which was huge. Yesterday felt like a little bit of a setback, but I'm doing pretty well. I think it's okay.
No, you're not pushing anything. Everything, you're hydrating well.
I am.
Can you stretch? Like, what do you?
No stretching.
You can't do anything with this, right?
Not yet. So we're going to give it about a week before there's any stretching whatsoever.
Okay, well, I mean, how much of your life have you had missed any golf? I know you're pretty upset you couldn't play on Friday.
Yeah, we'll be okay.
Okay.
We're going to be okay. We're going to survive this thing. I got a lot of texts from friends and people making fun of me, so yeah. Yeah, I got older. I did turn 46 yesterday. I'm sorry to report.
I was going to say happy belated birthday, but did we establish that you have officially accepted the middle age term?
Well, I think, as I said Friday, I've actually skipped past middle age and gone straight to elderly with this injury. Like, clearly, I'm not just middle aged. I went straight to elderly, and
problems.
Now I got even bigger problems. I did get my birthday cake yesterday, the chocolate eruption from Whole Foods. It was as good as you would think it could be.
Awesome.
And I have to say a huge thank you to Justin and Maura, even though she's not here today, for the ice cream sandwiches that you guys got me from Virginia. Oh my gosh, those were good.
They look fantastic.
They were awesome, and they were really easy to cut, so I was sort of able to eat some, share with the kids, and all of the mothers and mothers-in-law and everybody else that was at my house this weekend.
Well, thank TikTok for alerting us to them.
They were awesome. They were
unbelievable.
Unbelievably good. Best I've ever had.
Oh,
they were
wow.
Spectacular.
That is quite an endorsement.
Well, they were that good. All right. Anyway, thank you. We'll come right back with the things you care more about as we go around. Maura's not taking us around the weekend. Justin, are you prepared?
I've got the keys
for
to the
car. Trip around the weekend?
Yeah.
All right. Justin's going to update you next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Brock and Salk's Rewind is presented by Toyota of Kirkland.
When I left here on Friday, Justin, you were putting together various mean-spirited shots on video of edited me getting injured. And did those take off? Did you finish those?
Mean-spirited.
They seemed mean-spirited at the time.
The first thing I thought of was when you pulled up and reached back and grabbed the hammy was, and maybe a lot of people are familiar with this, I don't think you were, the Sonic losing his rings meme. That is, you know, when you're playing the game and Sonic loses all of the rings that he's collected and falls. That was the first thought I had that popped in my mind. It's like, oh, that sound.
Yeah.
The rings dropping. And some people seem to like that.
They did, huh? Funny. So you did put that out there?
I put that out. Sorry about that. That's the only one. There were no more. I didn't come up with any others. I just thought that was appropriate. And, you know, the kids would like it.
Here's all I have to say. The one thing that makes me happy is when you look at our Brock and Salk show clips at YouTube for the Seattle Sports YouTube page. And you guys should go subscribe to that. Thankfully, our interview with Byron Murphy has more views than the race. I was worried because I was like, oh, no, what if the race is like the most popular thing we've done on YouTube in forever? And it's second. So it's not like, you know, it's got like three times as many views as our interview with Troy Faldano, three times as many views on Seahawks and their, you know, being a sleeper to draft Michael Penix. But thankfully, at least our interview with Byron Murphy has more views than me getting injured trying to run a 200-meter race.
That is fantastic.
Let's go around the weekend.
Seriously, though, I can't. The amount of people this weekend at the ballpark who wanted to talk to me about the race was high.
Well, at least they didn't watch it.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, don't watch
Clearly haven't.
Don't watch it.
On that. All right, let's talk Mariners, since that's definitely where I spent my entire weekend. And we've didn't get much of it there in the open, and then there was a lot of draft coverage this weekend. Maybe some folks may have missed some of it. If not, Diamondbacks in town. Mariners would take game one against the D-backs 6-1. And it was all it took was one pitch from starter Zach Gallen, who's really good, by the way.
I know.
You forget.
Started the All-Star game last year.
Started the All-Star game in this. You said it. Need to know. Both World Series teams back to back. Obviously, they're going to have some really good starting pitching. All it took was one Zach Gallen pitch to give the Mariners a lead on Friday night. Josh Rojas led off the game with a homer against his former team.
Gallen, here's the pitch to Rojas. Swing and a drive, deep to right field, going back, and goodbye baseball. Josh Rojas hunting the first pitch from Zach Gallen, and he rides it into the lower deck in right field. Home run number two on the year for Rojas as he stings his former ball club. And the Mariners, just like that, have a quick 1-0 lead here in the bottom of the first inning. What a shot by Rojas.
What's going on with Josh?
Just
what's got into him? He's eating his Wheaties.
With that much, I remember how many they said that was for him. He did it again. We're going to get to it, but
a couple of leadoff home runs this weekend. Both times.
I'm kind of thinking maybe we move him somewhere else in the lineup?
No, gosh, no.
Let's get you on base.
Mike, what is with you and everybody else? The moment somebody does something good, you want to move them.
I don't want to move them.
Hey, this is working. Let's change it. Why do people want to change everything that works?
Table clearers.
Hey.
Perhaps being somewhere.
This platoon is working. Let's stop platooning.
Works great.
Hey, this is working with him in the leadoff spot. Let's take him out of there. No. He looks great in that spot right now while JP is on the shelf. Just let him be. He's a guy who, for the most part, gets on base. And if the opposing pitchers know that about him, and because of it, he gets an opportunity to turn around a fastball in the middle of the plate, great. Go take advantage of that and drive it out of the park, which is what he did both yesterday and on Friday. I'll take it. No changes, thank you. I think that's just fine.
All right, Mitch Garver followed up with a solo home run of his own. That felt good to see. It didn't really seem like it was going to be one based off the way it came off the bat.
I'm
not sure it was going foul. In the second inning, but a really fun part of the weekend was welcoming back our Mr. Good Vibes Only. His first return trip to Seattle, Eugenio Suarez got a big ovation from Mariners fans before his at-bat even started.
Folks, I've never seen a hitter get a standing ovation while he's in the on-deck circle.
And here comes A. Eugenio Suarez. And listen for the ovation for the former Mariner.
He had his arms up in the on-deck circle, did just a little victory lap. Like, it was fantastic. I've never seen it. And he was here for a short time, made a massive impact. People loved him. And he talked about pregame about what it meant for him to be back in the ballpark.
I think I've been thinking about that since I got traded. You know, I'm there, and I'm gonna feel the crowd. I want to feel the crowd cheer for their team, cheer for this favorite Seattle fans. Is one of the best that I have all my career, and the way they love the game, the way they support their team, is unbelievable. And that's something that I still missing. So I still love it, and I love all the support. And I just want to tell them keep supporting people, keep supporting the team, come and watch the game.
And then come and watch the game.
1 for 11 with a double, five strikeouts. It was not a very good weekend on the field for our old friend A. Eugenio, but he did receive a nice standing ovation, as you mentioned. I'm torn because if you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know that I don't root for players after they leave.
Yep.
Like, I don't care how nice they were. Whatever. They're gone. And I kind of tend to root against them to make it look like what you did was a good thing. I might have to make an exception for Eugenio just because of, you know, the personality, what he brought here, and he didn't choose to go somewhere else. Obviously, he was traded. I was thinking about Terry Francona, watching him over the weekend. And Tito used to have it happen all the time when I was covering him and just around him. And he, no matter who it was, any ex-player of his, any ex-guy who had played for him and was now somewhere else, he would always just, oh, he's a good kid. I love him. Hope he goes 0-for-12 in the series. Hope we strike him out 11 times. He goes 0-for-12. But I just love his great kid. I hope he hits 300 the day he leaves. And he would say that about everybody, right? It's a good kid. You know, I love him. But I hope he gives up five runs in like an inning and a third, and that's the end. Like, that's just what he would say every single time. And so I did find myself thinking that about A. Eugenio. Like, yeah, what a good guy. He did bring something special to this team for the 2 years that he was here. It's not an accident that Scott refers to him as one of the best teammates, maybe the best guy he's ever been around in terms of culture, just human being and being in a clubhouse.
Yeah.
But I was really glad to see that he was a non-factor in this series. That's important.
Yeah, until Sunday, of course. But yeah,
he was a non-factor yesterday, though. I mean, I know he had the one RBI.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't a big factor in the series.
Oh, totally. And after he, you know, they did it well. He was on deck. They played the montage on Mariner's Vision.
Mm-hmm.
He got to do the thank you, tip the hat. So you didn't have to do the weird thing where you waste his time out, which umpires should give him, you know what I mean, when they come up to the plate there. So it was cool. Fans loved him. Every single time he was announced in the lineup, crowd went nuts. And then, I think everybody kind of went back to, okay, now please just strike out.
Right, now strike out. Do what you used to do. Yeah.
All right, so that game scored, remained 2-0 into the sixth, where Josh Rojas would lead off the inning with not a home run. A walk. By Zach Gallen.
Yes.
Who would then exit the game mid-at-bat to Julio Rodriguez with tightness in his
hamstring.
Yes.
I did see that. I was like, oh, poor guy.
D-backs manager Torey Lovello said that he
doesn't that make you think that
fine.
I'm like not as old as it feels like. Hey, this guy's in the prime of his career. He can't even get through a Major League Baseball start. At least I was sprinting.
I was in the press box for it, so I couldn't quite hear at the moment what was going on. I thought it was an oblique. I then finally, once it was announced, all I could think about was you sitting at
Thank
home
you.
And hearing hamstring and being like, I'm redeemed. Look at this ace. Julio, though, like I said, he exited mid-at-bat. So Julio went on to single off of reliever Scott McGuff. And Cal Raleigh would then walk to load the bases for Mitch Haniger, who absolutely sold out on a full count 3-2 fastball.
And a 3-2 pitch to Haniger. Swung on. Fly ball deep left field. Going back. It's headed toward the pen. It's going. It's going. It's gone! A grand slam by Mitch Haniger. And he indeed blows the doors off of this place. The Mariners have a 6-1 lead. Mitch Haniger on a 3-2 pitch. Hey now!
Yeah, that was fun. He needed every inch of the walls being moved in a few years ago.
Yeah.
As that thing bounced off the top of the wall and out. But good on him. Good on them. They needed that to sort of just open things up and ensure that that game was going to be more of a laugher, and it was, and good on them.
Yeah, Hancock threw six strong innings. He only gave up two hits, including one that was a solo home run. That would be the only one.
A lot of double play balls from him, which was great.
Yeah, it was. Trent Thornton and Cody Bolton combined for three scoreless to secure the victory. Moving on to Saturday. Then this was had to be one of your favorite things to see. I know you love a pitching duel more than anything, but especially somebody who is in that, like, what do you, it's like the runner's high of pitchers where they just can't miss and you're painting corners.
Right.
And it's
just in the zone.
Yeah. It's a completely in the zone. D-back starter Slade Ciccone. He was actually pacing Kirby pretty well there for a while. And Kirby would see only seven hits total in the game as the Mariners took down the D-backs 3-1. That's securing the fourth consecutive series win. And it was 90s night at the ballpark, which was actually really fun. The whole way that they had presented it was a blast. I think everybody had fun, but I know I'm biased because I was sitting in that room watching it play up, and I knew what was coming.
Right.
So I was like, oh, the Montel Jordan cameo is about to hit. Like, I was very excited for it. But Kirby struck out a career-high 12 in seven scoreless innings. He only gave up two hits. He hit 99.3 miles per hour with his fastball, 23 swings and misses, and it was his strikeout of Suarez in the seventh that set the new career high.
1-2, ever popular Eugenio Suarez. Breaking ball, swung on a miss, struck him out. That's a dozen for George Kirby through seven innings, dominating a good ball club, the Arizona Diamondbacks. 12 strikeouts.
That's the best I've seen George Kirby pitch.
I think it's the best we've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I that's, I don't think going out on a limb to say that. And it was right from the first inning of the game. Like, the soon as he came out, you're like, oh, hello. This is a different George than the one we saw in the first couple starts this year where he just didn't look quite like himself. He was throwing 98, 99 early. He was spotting his fastball wherever he wanted. He was getting swings and misses on a four-seam fastball with regularity, which is not something you see a lot of in today's game. Scott mentioned it afterwards.
Yeah, like I said, 23 swings and misses on the fastball tonight. That's electric stuff. You just don't see that in this league, especially with the velocity nowadays and the way guys train. They're ready for velo. They know what George Kirby's going to go out and do against him. And still to get it done like that, very impressive.
That's sort of like, remember I played you that sound a little bit ago of Satoa Lamea, the new guard the Seahawks drafted, saying, I want to move a person from point A to point B against his will. It's kind of what George was doing in his own way on Saturday. Like, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do against your will. I know you know I'm going to try to do this, and you still can't beat me.
Right, appropriate.
Because I can put this wherever it is I want it to go.
Yeah. Did you see Pitching Ninja, his tweet over the weekend?
No.
George Kirby is arguably the best command pitcher of all time. And yes, I'm including Greg Maddux. Little early, but a Greg Maddux comp right there is not a bad thing to say. Greg Maddux, he also didn't throw with that kind of velocity.
I'm not going to comment on that. That sounds absurd. And I like Pitching Ninja, and I like George Kirby. I think a year or two into your career, maybe we don't need to make any comps to Greg Maddux just yet.
We'll skip on. Okay, Ciccone kept pace with Kirby, like we said. He struck out eight over six innings. But a double for Mitch Garver in the fifth, followed by a Luke Raley RBI single. Gave the Mariners a 1-0 lead, and it kind of felt like that would be all they need,
right,
the way Kirby was going. But D-backs reliever Bryce Jarvis walked Jorge Polanco in the seventh. Even Ty France an opportunity to add on, and thankfully he did just that.
Here's the 2-0 to tie the pitch. Swung on, high drive, left center field. Giddy up, baby! Hey now, it's gone, a two-run shot. Ty France and the Mariners have a 3-0 lead. Boy, did he muscle that baby out, his second of the year.
You know, Justin, the Mariners are better when they hit home runs.
Yeah, hit a walk, hit a home run.
Yeah. They're better when they walk. They're better when they hit home runs.
That's 410 feet.
Kind of what I take out of that one.
Right center. It's good. It was, like I said, it was a good thing because Ryan Stanek gave up a walk and a triple in the eighth.
Sure, seriously.
What is a little kind of an interesting experience we've had with him recently where he's put himself into some tough spots and he'll get two outs. And then it seems like that's when we start to see something we don't love happen.
Yeah, I was sort of saying that earlier. Like, they could use Matt Brash and Gregory Santos back. Santos not going to be until probably the end of May. So let's call it June 1st, roughly, that you're hoping to get him back. And with Brash, it's now an indefinite problem. So I don't think that's coming anytime soon. It's too bad. This thing was built with those guys in mind. And that's not to say that Stanek isn't doing he's in a good spot. The bullpen so far has been one of the best in baseball. But I think we all know that there are some you know, long-term question marks there that sure would have been eased with Matt Brash and Gregory Santos back and doing their thing.
Yeah, Andres Munoz would pitch a... Oh, so I should say Stanek was able to get out of the eighth and limit the damage to just the one run. Andres Munoz pitched a clean ninth for his fourth save. 3-1 Mariners win in the series win. George Kirby extended his scoreless streak to 14 innings, and here's what he had to say about his performance after the game.
I feel like just kind of mechanics, like click, and my body's just flowing, and I don't know. You kind of know from the beginning. You start warming up. You're like, okay, it's gonna be a good day. Feel good, and just gotta execute, and I did my job today.
It's so nice when your body starts flowing,
isn't it?
Yeah,
as a major league pitcher,
that's how I felt about 100 meters into that race.
I need more credit than that.
My body was flowing, and then it all went to hell.
You were flowing. You pointed at the camera, tongue out.
And then the gods...
The lightning bolt
the
comes
gods
down.
Decided to end that little bit of arrogance with some humility.
That was Saturday heading to Sunday.
Speaking of humility.
Yeah, fell 3-2 in the final game of the series with the D-backs in yet another pretty fantastic pitching matchup. Logan Gilbert, D-backs Brandon Pfaadt, who combined for 20 strikeouts.
Does Brandon Pfaadt have the best name in baseball?
He loved it. I know,
it's
that's
pretty
why
great.
I said it like
P-F-A-A-D-T.
That.
Tremendous.
It's good. It's good. With Gilbert's start, the Mariners starting pitchers now have gone a franchise record 16 consecutive starts without allowing two or more earned runs.
Wow. So yesterday was really disappointing. It was. I am not surprised that there will be some pretty upset Mariner fans after that game. Not just because they lost and not because they, you know, the offense didn't show up, but just because of the complete non-competitiveness, especially of the ninth inning, eighth and ninth inning. They were just non-competitive. Mm-hmm. It's one thing when you get a runner on in those spots and unfortunately they're not able to score. Okay, fine. It's frustrating. But, you know, you're not going to get a hit in every big moment and you can kind of chalk it up. There was something about the way they just rolled over and died in the last few innings of that game where you're just like, really? This is the same team? Like, okay, early in the game, you take Cal Raleigh out for his regular day off. That hurts. You take Haniger out for a day off. That hurts. You don't have J.P. Crawford in your lineup. That hurts. So you're kind of looking at it like, okay, where's the offense going to come from? And you knew it would be a tough day offensively. Cool that Leo Rivas ends up with a triple and a run scored in his first ever at bat in the big leagues. Good on him. And he seems like a fun little story and a nice kid. But then you get Cal into the game late and you get Haniger into the game late and they just kind of looked as hapless as everybody else. It just, you were waiting for any signs of life and they just didn't come yesterday. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a long-term thing. Hopefully not. Just one game and maybe they were tired after, you know, winning all of the games they have recently. Mm-hmm. They're playing good ball in general. That game was particularly non-competitive, especially late.
Well, it started off the same way that Friday's did without first pitch, second pitch. Josh Rojas gets his former team again.
The windup and the pitch to Rojas. Swing and a well-hit ball down the right field line. Line shot, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Line drive down the right field line. Another leadoff home run for Rojas.
What do you think? Should we keep him in the leadoff spot, Salk?
Yes. Seems to be working. Seems to be agreeing with him.
Gilbert then unfortunately gave up an absolute tank to Christian Walker in the second.
That ball was crushed.
422 feet.
Yeah, he got all of it.
Yeah, that tied it up at 1-1. But you said it, Mariners shortstop Leo Rivas making his MLB debut, tripled in his first career plate appearance, leading off the third inning.
Wind up in the pitch to Rojas. Swing.
Oh, shoot, I'm sorry about that.
Here's the 0-2 pitch from Pfaadt. Swung on and driven down the right field line. Going back into the corner. McCarthy can't get it. Bottom of the fence. Leo with his eyes on the ball. He's going to go for three. He's going to get there. Standing up. What a debut. What an 0-2 pitch. Leo Rivas triples in his first Major League at-bat. Hey now!
Good for him.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. He's not here for his offense. He's here for his defense, and mm-hmm. that's kind
of
what. Yeah, he did. That's what got him here. Is that he's a pretty steady defender at short, and they're going to need that at times. But you want to chip in with a little offense, especially in your first ever at bat. Cool. I wonder how many people have had triples in their first ever at bat.
They mentioned it on the
broadcast.
I bet
you that's pretty rare.
The last Mariner to do it, and I remember this because I had just moved here. It was Unieski Betancourt. It went in the left center, bounced around, and he ran a third. It was 2005.
Great. I mean, triples are rare in general.
First major league at bat.
Right? Yeah. So to have that in your first major league at bat.
In a ballpark that doesn't give up a lot of triples.
Yeah, it can't happen all that often. Yeah, that's a good point. It's in this ballpark, which is not a triples park.
Yeah.
pretty cool. Cool little scene for him. Good on him.
So he's on third. Rojas would reach base on a catcher interference. I hadn't seen that in a minute. Kind of confusing. Julio Rodriguez would deliver a little bloop single, which would score Rivas to give the Mariners a 2-1 lead. But Fott would be able to escape a no-out, bases-loaded jam.
Ah, Fott!
And that's where... where it started to kind of feel like, I think, the rollover and die situation probably started happening.
Yeah, they did not get on base for 20 straight.
Batters. Yeah, that would be pretty much it for the Mariners offense.
That's not really what you're looking for.
Fott was good. He went six. He had a career-high 11 strikeouts and no walks.
Yeah.
Gilbert would be able to finish the season-high 9, though, as he worked into the 7th. And, I mean, he was dominant, but he, unfortunately...
Yeah, you got to hit home runs and you got to walk. Like they didn't take a single walk in that game. They had one solo home run early.
Yeah.
And they need to do more than that, unfortunately. That's just not enough for this Mariner team. They need to walk and they need to hit home runs. So they didn't do it yesterday. It stinks that a fun run like this kind of ends on a bit of a sour note.
Yeah.
But you just faced two excellent ball clubs, Texas and Arizona, the two teams that battled for the World Series last year and beat them 4 out of 6.
Yep. That the lead that they took there in the 8th off the double from Ketel Marte was the first that they had over the entire weekend. But despite the loss, Mariners still lead the AL West.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah, and more than that, in general, playing good baseball. Playing much cleaner than they were at the beginning of the season. Hitting better. I know yesterday wasn't a great example of it, but in general, they have been hitting better than they were early. And obviously, the pitching right now is historic. We're going to dig into it a little bit in about 30 minutes at 7:30 and talk through, because what their pitching is doing is, like, legendary.
Yep.
Absolutely legendary. All right. Thank you, Justin. Well done.
Be there tonight. Bark at the park.
Didn't even miss more during that time.
Oh. Wow.
Bark at the park. Bark at the park night tonight.
Tonight. Yep.
You seen that clip of what the Rays did a few years ago with Bark in the Park night when they kept ringing doorbells in the park and all the dogs would start barking.
I didn't.
It was like, you know, kind of suck because it's Tampa, right? There's nobody there. It's quiet in the dome and you hear like ding dong. Like all these dogs are going crazy in the ballpark.
Drive me nuts.
Yeah, it's a pretty good idea. And then tomorrow night, you may know, is Hello Kitty night.
That's what you're going to.
I am, yeah. Taking Cecily and a couple of her buddies. We're going to go to Hello Kitty night tomorrow night. So
Jared Kelnick.
I'll be ready to report back on what all of that is like. All right, let's come back here with draft analysis. A ton of it over the course of the next 3 hours. What did Brock make of this draft? I gave it one word. What word will Brock use? Find out next on Brock and Salk.